Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I couldn't be better, Tim. It's a wonderful day. You are sitting there on a beach. There's some waving palm trees in the background, so I know you must be doing well. I hope everyone out there listening is doing well. But yeah, how are you, Tim?
I'm doing great, and while it looks like I'm on the beach, this is actually just a fake Zoom background, Lance.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you had an incredible wind control on that mic, too, because it seems a little breezy over there.
Yeah, well, it's breezy in the Zoom background, but there's really no breeze here where I am in front of my desk. And Lance, this episode today was recorded recently on a Tuesday night. We do our Crime and Culture live shows, and it streams to Twitter, the Crawl Space Twitter, and the Crawl Space YouTube. And we had on two fancy pantses, the doctors of Women in Crime, Doctors Amy Schlossberg and Megan Sachs from the Women in Crime podcast. They're a lot of fun to talk to.
We always have a good time talking with them. I think mostly because they understand that you can keep the conversation light and still talk about some serious subjects. And we do get into some serious subjects during this conversation, but it is on the lighter side and we have some good laughs. And if anybody hasn't heard their podcast, Women and Crime, please check it out. They are super smart. Both of them are doctors. They're criminologists, and you can access everything that they do on their website, womenandcrimepodcast.com.
They do a great show over there, and they're real professionals. Highly recommend their show. And this was recorded live, so the vibe of this will be a little bit different from a typical Crawlspace interview. And we kind of bounce from segment to segment, topic to topic, pretty quickly. In the first segment here in this episode, we talk about Vicky and Casey White, and that's kind of a story that has broken over the past few weeks. And we don't get too deep into that subject, or really any subject, because of the nature of these live shows, Lance. We kind of bounce around to topic a little bit. But we wanted you to see what we do on these live shows, and we wanted you to check out Women in Crime because they're so fun to talk with. And Lance, other segments, we will talk about the Sherry Papini case and that whole story. And we also get into a Netflix documentary about Jimmy Savile. And then there's a little bit of the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial at the end of the episode.
You know, it's really amazing how much is packed into just under an hour of conversation, because we do these shows from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. and there's always, you know, the introduction in the beginning. And so the conversation itself typically goes about, you know, 50 minutes or so. And we covered so much. And that's, I think, the fun of talking with these doctors, is how quickly we moved from topic to topic seamlessly. But those topics weren't exactly related.
Right. I mean, and most of the casual stuff is cut out of what you're about to hear, too. So usually you'll get some more jokes and some casual transitions that happen. This time we're going to go sort of straight to point in this episode. But make sure to check out our Crime and Culture Nights. We do have one coming up this week with Jordan Bonaparte of the Nighttime Podcast. It's happening at 9 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, May 25th. And you can find it live streaming at 9 p.m. on our YouTube. That's where the chat generates. It's youtube.com/crawlspace. And you can find it on our Twitter. It streams there live as well. That's twitter.com/crawlspacepod.
And I know we did say that we do these every other Tuesday, so you did not hear that wrong. We had to reschedule a little bit for Jordan because we really wanted to have him on. We hadn't talked to him in a long time. So this one's the exception. It is on Wednesday, and then we're back to our every other Tuesday until we change it again.
We just got to keep people on their toes, Lance. That's what we do over here.
Yep. When we zig, you zag. What?
And also, we're releasing more episodes, Lance. I don't know how many listeners have noticed, but we're really we're doubling our output, Lance.
It's really getting to the point, Tim, where no matter what I say, if I don't have a microphone in front of me, I feel lost. I feel like it's a conversation wasted. So we're going to double up on the content because we just can't seem to stop talking.
I mean, I feel like there's nothing to say if there's no microphone in front of me and it's not rolling. So yeah, more content. Hopefully you like it. Let us know what you think. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening. Follow us on social media. There are links in the show notes. Thanks a lot for listening.
And if you're a fan, if you like what you hear, please, on whatever podcast listening service you are loyal to, be sure to give us a nice review, maybe pop a 5-star rating in there. It goes a long way. Also, do the same for the Women and Crime show. Make sure you give them a good review and rating as well. And be sure to follow them on all of their social media as well, Women and Crime Podcast.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances,
our episodes offer you a panoramic view of the world's greatest mysteries, leaving no stone unturned, no clue unnoticed.
With a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained.
We're unraveling the mysteries that have perplexed humanity for ages.
So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored.
Things that we are obsessed with right now is, are you guys following the prison, you know, correction officer scandal?
Let's talk about that.
I feel like it has to have a little bit of attention. First of all, I'd like to say that I thought she was, if I had a guess, I thought she was probably deceased before. I thought he would have, you know, the prisoner would have kind of used her, gotten rid of her, fled on his own, taking the money, you know. So I was actually surprised she was still alive.
Give us a little background of the whole thing? Because I tend to see these things on a television that's muted. So if I'm at the gym or something, like, I'll see it and I just kind of try to follow the captions and then I'll read about it later on.
Right. Okay. Amy, do
give
you
me a little
do
background.
So I mean, I'm not fully versed in it, but I can tell you what I know is the second highest official at a jail in Alabama left with a very high profile inmate who was being charged with 2 counts of capital murder. She was taking him to what she said was a mental health appointment. So she left with him. It turns out there was no appointment and nobody questioned her because she was high up. So they kind of just took it for, you know, she knew what she was doing, whatever. She turns out that she was retiring the next day. Turns out she never came back with this gentleman and the two of them went on the run. It comes out that they had a pre-existing relationship for about 2 years. She was, if I recall, about 20 years his senior. And yeah, this was very much planned. Like, she sold off a car, you know, she sold off a house, got like $90,000 in cash. It was very much a planned thing, and these two ran off together.
Amy, I love how you're like, I don't really know much about it, but let me tell you the exact details. I know you're obsessed with this, so you're like, I don't know.
Well, because that was my disclaimer. So if I sounded like I didn't know what I meant, it's like, well, I already said I didn't know everything. So okay. I don't know everything. But basically, they were found in Indiana because they're idiots. And no, I don't want to say that. So she bought a car in cash.
Right. Well, you're right. They planned for a while, but then once they actually got on the run, the plan wasn't really well thought out past that point, it seems.
I mean, he wore a hat. She wore a wig. He lost a ton of weight, it seemed, in a short period of time. There were no surveillance videos of her anywhere that they've made public. So I don't know what her look was.
I wish we knew what the plan actually was. Like, Amy and I were discussing it earlier because obviously what else would we be talking about all day? But we don't know if where they got caught in Indiana, but where was the plan? Where were they going? And I mean, he's probably not going to talk to authorities because they're not going to offer him any type of deal, I would imagine. So, but I'm just so curious, like were they ever going to head for a border? Were they going to hole up in a cabin in the woods? Were they, you know, I've heard people say, you know, they escaped from Alabama and they went through Tennessee. Why not just live in the mountains in Tennessee, like, you know, rural life off the grid? So I would love to know. That's like my burning question above all. Just what was the plan?
I would also like to know if it's possible that he actually was in love with her, or if he was just, I mean, I'm assuming he was using her as a vehicle, as a means to an end. She seems like she was very vulnerable and he preyed on her and made her, you know, groomed her essentially for a while to make her think, you know, that he was in love with her. Like Megan said, I'm surprised he didn't get rid of her sooner, especially since she had all that cash. I also wonder, you know, we were talking, me and Megan, she allegedly shot herself in the head, and I'm wondering, did he kill her? But why would he have killed her at that point? I don't know.
I don't think he did at that point, but I also, oh gosh, I had one more thing that I wanted to say. I forget what it was. All right.
Yeah, because I kept going. I'm sorry.
No, it was good. You had good stuff, but I had something else like that I wanted to know about the situation, like something with her. I'll think of it as we go.
Was it something about his moobs?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. What I wanted to say was, and that was, you know, a good transition for me, thank you, was that I wondered if, you know, Amy just said, like, you know, he was grooming her. But typically we talk about how people in authority are the, you know, she was the you know, authoritative, the power figure. So she had the control, you might say. But I've heard from, you know, different offenders that perspective that no, they're, you know, the power dynamic works both ways in the prison setting. So even though you might assume, well, she was the one in authority or the authority figure, he could totally have been also grooming her, or it could be genuine love. Who knows? Either way, it was a really bad plan. I feel like it's never a good plan. How many prisoners have been successful?
I know, right? I was actually just going to say that. Like, how many times do you hear about a prison escape that I guess in modern society with social media and everything, you always hear, you can always get the news in some way pretty quickly. I mean, I don't think, when I saw this, I was like, people still escape from prison at all? Like, they still think they can do this?
Well, they can, apparently, because they did. So, I mean.
Escape, but they're almost always caught.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So what I saw was, what I learned about this today was that she had a self-inflicted gunshot wound, and she's still alive, right?
No.
She's dead.
Oh, yeah. She's dead. Okay. See, this is how out of touch I am with this whole thing.
Come on. It happened like 9 hours ago.
I know.
But he gave himself up. So when I saw this, I thought to myself, maybe they had this, you know, suicide murder or a suicide pact, you know, and she went first. He convinced her to go first. And then he just got out of the car and was like, all right, I'm done.
Well, might I add that the first thing he said to the officers when he got out of the car is, help my wife. She shot herself. I didn't do it.
So, well, you know, that sounds like true love.
I mean, he's already accused of 2 capital crimes. I think he just wanted to get in front of this one.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
I also feel like, you know, Vicky could have had a pretty decent defense.
Yeah.
you know, had she made it through this arrest and made it to trial, she, you know, they definitely would have turned on each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So you think she could have had the good, like he, you know, forced me. I was scared
like
of
duress. Yeah.
100%. Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. I agree with you, but then I think about how much planning had gone into it. Like she put in her retirement. That was her last day of work. The next day, her retirement started. Like she had a ton of cash. She made these appointments. So it was like very well thought out. If it was more spur of the moment, I think that would be a better argument. Like if he was just like, I'm going to kill you if we don't do this.
What are you, a lawyer?
I'm not a lawyer.
Are you trying to make us sound dumb?
That's what I'm here for. Isn't that why you invited me?
So Casey White is the suspect who's in custody, and Vicky White is the deceased, and no relation.
So weird.
Okay, see, I think that was my confusion too. Was I thought that they were already in a marriage?
I wonder if that was like his intro, like, "Hey, you're Officer White. I'm, you know, Casey White. You know, like his move, like his game.
Maybe."
Maybe it was hers. Who knows? You know, can't wait to see her.
What was the age difference?
20 years.
She was 20 years his senior.
Am I looking at the right pictures?
Yeah.
How old was she?
He looks so much older.
A lot of years of a lot of drugs.
And I think her photo was a little bit older. So I think we're looking at an older photo of her and a photo of him that reflects a very hard life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he was, I think, 38. He's 38. And I was like, whoa, I would not have guessed that either.
I'm sorry to change the subject back to true crime here, but anyone want to talk?
Oh, pardon us.
We weren't talking what you want to talk. Sherry Papini.
Sherry Papini.
Yes, I would love to talk some Sherry Papini. I saw you covered her case a little bit recently back in March on your podcast.
You follow us? That's so nice.
Of course we do. Yeah, tell us a little bit about this case. I know it's sort of been a story that's taken years now to kind of develop and the truth to finally be out there. Yeah, tell us a little bit about this.
Long story short, Sherry Papini one day goes out for a run. Young mother of, you know, two young children. Blonde, beautiful, probably in her 20s, maybe 30s. I don't remember. But she went out for a run and then she seemingly disappears. And there's this huge manhunt for her. No one knows where she is. All they find is her earbuds and her cell phone, like on the side of the road. She reappears. Megan, I can't remember how long after was it. Do you?
3 weeks.
Okay. See, even though it was mine, I still can't get the details. So 3 weeks later, she shows up on the side of a road, her hair chopped off. She's battered, bruised, shackled,
branded.
She's branded, like has a random branding on her. You know, also, she was
85 pounds. She was a tiny girl, like, you know, 105, but she went from 105 pounds to 85 pounds.
So she was like very sickly, very much not in good shape. She had black eyes. You know, she couldn't really tell the police much other than, you know, two Hispanic women had kidnapped her, right? And that was really, it just became kind of a cold case and people started suspecting that is it possible that she like gone-girled herself. Okay. But because of another case nearby, Denise Huskins, who we actually spoke to Denise, and her husband on our podcast, Denise Huskins was a lady who was kidnapped in California and no one believed her. And it turns out she was actually a victim. So people falsely believe that she had gone-girled herself when it turned out she was in fact brutalized. So because of that, people were hesitant to do that again, which I think is the right thing. As me and Megan said several times on the podcast, we would rather believe a victim any day, over, you know, the opposite. So it turns out that, Megan, what ends up happening?
Shockingly, I have to say, the police gathered the evidence, which showed that Sherry Papini did this. You know, she did gone girl herself, essentially. They found out that she had gotten in touch with an ex-boyfriend and recruited him to help her kind of disappear for a couple of weeks. And I think what's even more so shocking is that these couple of weeks weren't like, you know, fun. There's that story, Quinn Gray. I don't know if you guys remember her, where she kind of did the same thing, but she was with a boyfriend and, you know, it was just like a fun time for her. She was trying to get money out of her husband. Sharon Papini spent 3 weeks like in a bedroom in her ex-boyfriend's house by herself. He was not with her. There was no intimacy. She spent her time starving herself,
beating herself up,
smashing her head in a bathtub. She had her ex-boyfriend, who thought it was, of course, you know, like really strange, go out and get a brand. What do you call that? The thing you brand with? I'm not
brander.
Sure. Yeah, I'm like, it's not a brander, doctor, but you know, she had him brand her. She cut her own hair off. I mean, this was not a fun vacation for this woman. She really seemed to, even at her own hand, suffer greatly. So this is, you know, very, very perplexing, I think, to us.
And many issues arose because, besides the fact that she wasted resources, she took away time from other cases. There was almost like this race war because people were like looking for these Hispanic women who kidnapped her.
He said, you didn't say that before, but she had alleged that two Hispanic females were the ones who kidnapped her. So then, yeah, there was all this, you know, profiling going on and innocent people, you know, being targeted. And so, I mean, it's really become, it's a shocker.
And she finally pled guilty. So that's a spoiler alert. Is she pled guilty? Her husband filed for divorce and custody of the children. And, you know, that's really, I guess, where we are today. That happened, I guess, a couple of weeks ago.
I'm sure we're going to see a movie come out about her soon.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, yeah, probably a couple, but that's where we are. It's a crazy story, right, guys?
No, it totally is. What's the reason behind this? And did she do anything like this in the past? Was there any examples of a psychological breakdown?
There were signs of mental illness from an early age. Megan, what was it? There was a lot of false police reports.
Yeah, she had false police reports earlier on. She also had broken into a family member's house, if I'm not mistaken, stolen things. She definitely had, it looked like, if you looked at her past events, I mean, none of it was incredibly serious, but it looked like almost a buildup to what, you know, I would call sort of a break here. I mean, she planned it, but, you know, I liked, when we talked about it on our show, obviously everyone is upset with her, and rightfully so. She wasted police resources, took time away from real victims, but I think that she suffers. You know, I think
she's ill.
I think she's definitely a very sick girl. Sick woman, I should say. I'm not necessarily sure, you know, what she's suffering from. Like, there's a couple of different indicators, but I wouldn't quite know. I'd be really curious. I wish there was with her plea agreement. I don't know if there's going to be a psychiatric evaluation, but I would be very interested to see what that would reveal.
Devin, in the comment area here on YouTube, asks, she collected victims. She says she collected victims' money after this was.
Oh,
can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So she was charged with check fraud because she was taking money from the victim's compensation fund in California. So that was actually her first charge, is that they charged her with mail fraud and some other fraudulent behavior because she was, you know, she had a GoFundMe. The family had a GoFundMe. And then she was also withdrawing money for, like, you know, mental health services. And, you know, again, money that could be used for actual victims.
But interestingly, she was seeking mental health treatment, correct, Amy?
Correct. She did use some of the money for other things. Like, you know, she was like buying stuff off Amazon.
So I just wonder, she did seem to want to utilize or access mental health treatment. I just wish we knew exactly, or more, not exactly, but, you know, more what that was about, you know?
Yeah. Do you think, like, the money thing is just like a, not an excuse, but maybe it's someone's doing it for the thrill of doing it, and they have to bring in, like, some sort of theft. Like, they need to give people an excuse. Does that make sense? You know, maybe she just didn't think that, like, the thrill wasn't enough.
No, I think she just had to play the part. I don't think they needed the money.
Digging her heels in so far.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Sorry, that's a much better way to put it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. She's, like, overdoing it, over sort of dramatizing her lies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she had to, because at that point, she had to stick with the story. That was the story. So she needed to, you know, get the victim money and needed to, you know, look like a victim and whatever else.
Well, I'm going to throw out something that the doctors here can wrap their significant brains around.
Yeah.
What if this was a white man who did this? What do you think the reaction would be?
I think they can't even talk it.
Oh, I love it.
No, I think the better question is, what if it was a person of color?
That's what I think the better question is, too.
Well, I was going to go down that route, but I didn't want to get into the Jussie Smollett.
Gotcha. Okay, so you're just wondering if she was a man.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm. You mean what would be the reaction? Or
yeah, yeah, yeah. Bless you. Oh, my goodness. Oh, bless you. Oh, allergies.
I'm allergic to that line of questioning.
A really bad reaction to that. I think that a man would be certainly more, I do think she's been, you know, demonized to some degree and rightfully so, but I think it'd be much worse for a male.
You think it'd be much worse?
I disagree, because she was demonized because she's a mom who left her kids. Megan, you know how we love talking about gender.
Actually, you know what? I will, as I'm looking at this, I'm thinking like people wouldn't be as sympathetic to a male as they are to a female.
Yeah, but people are actually giving her, I think, more slack because she had money. She had these two beautiful children. It's like, what more do you want? And here you go.
It could be true. Either way, that could be right. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I have seen mixed reactions, though, especially like we get emails, we get messages about their cases, and they're, I would say, pretty evenly balanced with people who are like, I can't believe she did this, with other people saying, you know, she's a sick woman. Like, there's something way deep beneath the surface here that the, you know, people who are judging her outright just aren't seeing. So,
well, I have to say, I'm on Team Sherry completely, all the way here. Sorry, just kidding. I expected a laugh. No, I'm not on Team Sherry.
Wait, were you the guy she was with?
No, it wasn't me.
He actually wasn't at Crime Con last week.
The one part about this story that I find really, well, there's a lot of parts that are outrageous, but you know, the I guess race baiting that she willingly put out there. Saying that they were, she said, Mexican or Latino or something like that. Sort of a really weird angle to this. And
she had a history. Sorry to interrupt, but I just want to throw in, she had a history of some online behavior. Apparently, when she was in, that was nice synchronized drinking right there. Did you plan that?
Yep.
That was beautiful.
Ooh, well done.
So apparently in high school, she went to a high school with a large population of people who were Latino. And apparently she had some issues with some girls growing up. And then she wrote on a blog some derogatory comments. So I think that's why she had something. It seems like she had some issue with women who were Hispanic, which is why maybe she did that. Maybe she just, you know, that was the first thing that came to mind. Who knows?
I think she also had to use females and not males because to explain the lack of a sexual assault, which we would typically think would mm-hmm. be a motive for abducting mm-hmm. you know, a woman off the road. You know what I mean? So I think like females were definitely a choice for that reason.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Now, is there any way that she would receive any compensation if a docuseries or a narrative series or a movie were made about this?
She could. It depends. You know, not every state has the Son of Sam laws, which are, you know, that you cannot basically profit off of your crime. It's like a false myth that all states have that. They don't. So it's definitely possible that she could, you know, if someone wanted to consult with her for a book, for a movie, she could profit off of it.
Or maybe her family and her children can. That would be better.
Yeah, I see. And that's a good point you brought up, that not every state has the Son of Sam laws. I think that's, like you said, that's a misconception that is a thing. Is that a reason? And should we as a production and media company approach her for her rights here? I mean, are we set to make some cash here?
Wait, this is a serious question.
Nope.
He's like, serious. Well, how do you want to approach her, Lance? What's your approach? What's your idea?
I'm just going to come with a blank checkbook.
Or we could do a documentary. Megan can play her.
I think you would be more appropriate at her. She was very tiny, like you. So,
but she had short hair when she was found.
Well, I think we could take a really avant-garde. No, we'll take a really avant-garde approach, a really surrealist approach. We can all play her the way like they did the Bob Dylan movie where like Kate Blanchett was playing Bob Dylan and like everyone played a version of Bob Dylan. I think that's the way to go.
The role of the husband, though, it's got a lot of teeth to it. I would love that role.
You could sink those teeth. Yeah.
And even the ex-boyfriend. I mean, I would love to just get in there and see what was going through his head when he branded her.
Explore that. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I want to be the guy who sold the branding thing.
It was some guy at Hobby Lobby. It was like a cashier at Hobby Lobby.
Yeah.
I want
that cameo.
You think that has enough depth for you, though, Lance? Like just being like kind of a small part and not really exploring like.
See, some people, they run marathons. They're really good at it. Some people do a sprint. They're really good at it. That's how I approach my acting. I'm a quick hitter. I'll be in there. I'll leave the impression. I'll almost steal the show in like a minute and a half.
Yeah. I would just say you probably play several roles. Like you probably also play the first responding officer and, right. and things like that, you know, like kind of quick things. But I can really see you in that Hobby Lobby. When I go in and me and Sherry, we check out with the branding thing and you're like, huh? And you look at us, huh? And you can kind of tell.
They don't look like they own cattle.
And in the close up, you can kind of tell that something's going on in your head, huh?
They don't look like cowboys.
I'm sorry to throw a wrench. Sorry to throw a wrench in the production, but Sherry was not with the boyfriend at the Hobby.
I was going to point that out, but they were going so strong.
This is a dramatized version.
You know, we can adapt it.
We're taking some creative liberties.
We'll take some liberties.
Yeah, and we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
In a small town in Colorado, people turn to a family-run funeral home in their deepest moments of loss. Run by a mother and daughter team, the funeral home offered thoughtful services at a fair price. But there was a dark side to their business.
It was truly a house of horrors.
He said she may have dismembered him and sold parts of him.
I'm getting angry all over, a small sweat breaking out.
I'm investigative reporter Ashley Fonts, and this is the story of an unbelievable crime you've never heard of. A story of a funeral home that lured their victims in the front door only to sell their bodies out the back. From Campside Media and Sony Music Entertainment, listen to Cover Up, Body Brokers. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary and the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune into Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program.
Have you guys covered at all, or are you interested in covering, speaking of docuseries, I just can't get this out of my head, the Jimmy Savile, A British Horror Story, the one that's on Netflix?
I don't think I know that. No. Tell us.
God. It's the he was a DJ turned TV star. Who raised like 44 million pounds in Britain. He was Prince Charles and Princess Diana's like confidant. And he was this like huge fundraiser, and he did this show that featured like pop artists, and he was like always the mover, the shaker. He had this, you know, bleach blonde hair, kind of like a striking look.
Now I know who you're talking about.
Oh my God. Yeah. And he's molested up to 400 children.
Yes, what? I know exactly who you're talking about. I just didn't know the name. Yes, Jake I think James and I started watching something on that. It was crazy. I mean, yeah, it was up to like 400 kids. He's like,
I can't get it out of my head. It's called A British Horror Story on Netflix. Jimmy Savile. My God. And
I'm assuming he's in prison now. Dead?
No, he's dead. He's dead. Okay. He died of, I guess, natural causes. And then all of these accusations came out, like, sort of while he was sick, and then he died. And they ended up ripping up his tombstone. Like, he was knighted. They knighted this guy. Yeah. The worst part is he would go to these institutions that housed troubled young individuals, both male and female, and he would just have his way with them. He would just pick them up and drive them away in his car. And no one did anything because he would raise money for charity.
Wow.
The most prolific, like, child molester in history, in the world.
James had told me about it. Now, I just didn't remember the name, but James was telling me about it. And we watched something on it, and I was like, mind blown. Hundreds of victims, timing where no one did anything. He was this larger than life. He was such a personality. You know what he reminds me of?
Tim Poleri. But thought I was muted.
He reminds me of Tiger King. What's his name? Joe Exotic.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Right? But I mean, but, like,
in terms of like the personality and the, you know, he's this huge, you know, the blonde like personality. I don't know. He just reminded me of him.
Yeah. So the question that I was going to pose is, do you think that there is a legitimate justification in someone like his, like in his mind, he was raising all of this money for charity as a way to balance it out. And he said it too. Like when he passed through the gates in heaven, he wanted to know that he had a clean bill of health. So whatever he did that was bad, he could balance it out by raising $1 million.
I'm laughing because Megan, when I say three, let's say what theory we're talking. Let's see if we're on the same page. Ready? One, two, three. Techniques of neutralization.
Sorry.
You missed my count, but I know you knew what I was going to say, and you were going to.
I totally did. Sorry, I was just. I was going to say neutralization. You start with techniques, you know.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, you just did a very nice job, Lance, of explaining a theory that we call techniques of neutralization, whereby someone neutralizes their criminal behavior in various ways, and I think.
How do they they neutralize their guilt because they know they're doing something wrong, but they can neutralize it by like these techniques where they deny a victim, deny the injury, deny
responsibility. And that's what enables them to keep doing it again because they don't feel bad about it because in their mind, there's a justification.
And I'm going to geek out one more second and just take this to also, I got a second theory. Do you know what I got or no? When someone has a lot of power,
control,
balance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, control balance theory. Yeah. When someone has too little control or too much control, they commit crimes. So in this case, he has so much, I'm sorry, he has a lack of control over him, right? He is powerful. He can do anything he wants. So people like this tend to commit these types of crimes of almost greed and entitlement. Wow, sorry.
Additionally, that's very interesting. And I'm glad we're going down this road here with the theories and again, not justifications, but you know, the internal workings in his mind and people like that. When he was a child, not a child, when he was in his like early teens, I think he was working in a mine. I don't know what kind of mine, but he was working in a mine and he was injured and he had to, I guess, relearn how to walk.
Interesting.
Does that contribute to that? Like when you've come so close to being killed or paralyzed and you overcome that?
Well, it sounds to me that this would be like the neurological perspective under biological or biosocial theory. When someone has a brain injury, then, you know, there's definitely a correlation between brain injuries and offending. Yep. Because it could be, you know, lack of self-control or impulsivity or all these other, you know, personality traits that can be affected by a brain injury. Megan, were you thinking that?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Sometimes I think we are the same brain. But,
same brain.
Yeah, and then you combine it with like sociological factors, like we just explained those theories of control or techniques, and you have a perfect storm.
And I don't know anything about his childhood. I'm wondering if there were other things going on. Like, was he molested as a child? And if so, then...
But by all accounts, he wasn't. There's like interviews with him and his mom, and they seem to have a really good relationship. They're in the same room together talking, and she's giving him some shit and he's giving it back, and they're laughing. And it doesn't seem like that there was any sort of,
you know, it could have been a neighbor, the mother's ex.
It could have been,
you know, who knows, but
then no one. It could have been that he had a perfectly fine childhood, and, you know, either biologically or sociologically, or, you know,
a little of everything.
Yeah. It could be a little bit of everything.
And LA Not So Confidential, I believe it's Shiloh there in the chat, says, does that contribute to pedophilic disorder?
Got it. I was thinking of the same thing, but you know what, Shiloh? I'm also thinking you could probably answer that question better than us.
She does say, she does follow it up by saying that it was a rhetorical question.
Okay.
I knew that because we've interviewed Shiloh on our show a number of times. We definitely go to her as somewhat of an expert in this area for a couple of different things. So I'm sure.
What a show off.
I know. Bragger.
Shiloh the show off. No, I'm kidding.
Well, okay, we can move on from this topic in 1 minute, but I'm very curious now that we've gone down this path about this guy. He was injured and he was nearly paralyzed and probably nearly killed when he was a young man. Is there some sort of stunting that happens in his development where that, and he also claimed to have led a life of extravagance and claimed to have had a lot of girlfriends and claimed to have like this nightlife and he was always out. And only one reporter challenged him and said, like, we've never found a girlfriend. We've never found a significant, we've never found anybody. And he dodged the question all over the place. And it made me think, is there a chance that that time of his accident when he was right at that developmental age as a young man, did that stunt him like sexually? And that's why he goes towards individuals of that age.
What age was he?
I believe he was like maybe 12-13 ish. He was old enough to be put to work, but he wasn't like an adult.
Interesting theory.
I don't know. I'd say that's a possibility, but I wouldn't think that that's the reason why. Although it's possible, because we definitely know that there have been people who, when we're talking about brain injuries, act so differently afterwards, have committed acts, you know, against, let's say, a child, or, you know, it totally changes their personality. So it's hard to know without knowing him really well. I don't know. I suspect that wasn't the cause, but it's possible.
It could be part of, you know, a conglomerate of causes.
I just wouldn't know enough to feel like comfortable saying, like, I think it's more likely this or that. I don't know. I guess I'll have to watch the documentary now.
Yeah, I got to check that one out too. Shiloh says that's not a thing either.
That's not a thing. I guess either. Not.
It does sound like it would. It has some logic there, but so I guess Shiloh, she would know. Whatever, she went to school for it.
I guess she went to school for it.
I don't see Shiloh's thing, but Shiloh, I'm not saying stunted, but certainly if there was some type of brain injury or something, it could alter his behavior. No, I mean, we know that happens criminologically, so I'm wondering why that would.
I think she was shooting down Lance's theory of kind of like the sexual stunting.
Oh, she's saying that is determined in utero. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I think it was an interesting theory. Yeah,
maybe we should send Shiloh the Zoom link and she can hop in.
Lance, I thought it was a little far-fetched, but I was like, going to give you the benefit of the doubt, you know.
Well, I think I was being influenced by the book Lolita and the main character who was in love with, when he was a young man, he was in love with this girl who died, and that's why he was attracted to young women.
Oh.
I think you were falsely influenced by that, for sure.
It's just where my brain went. I'm not falsely influenced by the book. Don't start making this into something weird.
You leave him alone.
All right. Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. I mean, I was just...
I don't read that every day.
We got about 10 minutes to go here on Crime and Culture Live. I want to say big thanks to the chat room. Very active tonight. How's it going, everybody? And before we go, though, I do want to sort of bring up a topic that we're not going to have enough time to fully unpack here tonight, but the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial.
I'm obsessed. Amy's not following it like I am, but let me just say I'm obsessed. I don't want to cut you off, but I do, and I want to have a whole nother show about this because, just so you know, I've been watching the trial like all, I've almost covered probably 90% of it so far. You know, they're on break this week, and I was like, what?
I don't understand why it's so long.
Well, what do you mean? How long? Because there's
it's a defamation. It's not a murder trial.
Yes, but murder trials often don't have the parties testifying. So remember, in most murder trials, you don't have someone, like when Jodi Arias took the stand, she was like 20 days on the stand, right? In this case, you have both parties taking the stand and they're both on the stand for a number of days being cross-examined and whatnot. So just by the very nature of them both testifying, it extends the trial. And oh my gosh, it is so interesting. People have so many different opinions of this. I'm trying to reserve my judgment till the end. But I'm like, I'm really hyped on it. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, even on my ride home, I've been like hooking in my iPod. Like I've been listening to the trial. Like I just didn't want to miss. I get obsessed like this with certain trials. Like I did the last one I got this obsessed with was the Jodi Arias one. And I just can't miss a minute of it.
So. I think it feels like it's gone on longer because Johnny Depp had that other libel suit that was going on in the UK. So it feels like this is sort of the same thing because it was only like a few months in between.
And he lost that one.
He did lose that one. Yeah. It does bring up a really interesting, not bring up, it does put a bit of a spotlight on the other side of domestic abuse.
How so? I agree.
Well, we don't typically see a nationally televised trial that features a man saying that he was abused by his wife. And, you know, the size difference is there. The fame factor is there. I mean, she's famous, but she's not Johnny Depp. Like, Johnny Depp is a household name. So all of those come into play when you look at this. I honestly don't know what to feel because I think personally both of them are very disturbed people. And I think that they were very bad to be together. And you, bless you.
I'm sorry. Stop sneezing.
This topic does it to her as well.
All right, allergic to this one too. Sorry, continue. Yeah.
But speaking of allergic, I feel like they were allergic to each other. Like they just couldn't be together. It was going to, it's toxic, toxic, toxic.
Megan, why are people so like obsessed with this case? Because they're famous?
I think it's because, well, A, they're famous, yes. B, what Lance just said, you don't often see the side where it's you know, a male accusing a female, you know, and getting right out in front of it. I mean, the fame part is, I think, what allures people because they don't get this kind of insight into regular celebrities, right? You get like a picture, social media, like the bright side, but this is showing the dark side of, you know, being almost being famous and having some of these issues in your relationship, and they're putting it out there. I mean, let me just say this. Johnny Depp put this out there in the world because he said that, you know, her claims of abuse basically robbed him of roles and other things. And while I don't know if that's true yet or not, I definitely know there's been some definite, like serious evidence at trial that she was abusive. And I don't know yet whether he was, but none of this looks good for him. Because, I mean, what they've unraveled, even if not yet, they haven't shown he was outright abusive, is that, you know, he was a serious substance user and abuser. And, you know, he had very bad moments. I'm just saying, he's being honest, and I definitely credit him for that. But I don't also think that this is going to play well into, you know, his claim that he should have another Pirates of the Caribbean. I don't think this helps him in that regard.
I agree.
Yeah, well, no one wants to see another Pirates movie anyway.
Hey, speak for yourself.
This is making him, I don't think this is helping him. I don't know. But you know what? If he's truly a victim, and I think there's definitely some victimization they've shown, then maybe I don't blame him. But it's too soon to, like, you know, we have to wait till the end. Amber Heard is testifying. She hasn't even been cross-examined yet. So I think that we have to wait for that.
Megan, Twitter has already decided on this one.
What?
Simultaneously trending is Amber Heard is a psychopath and I stand with Amber Heard. So I literally have no idea what to think.
Yeah. I've seen some geeky forensic analysis of it, and I've watched some segments on behavioral specialists, and, you know, the people who are looking at social cues and all that. Social cues, sorry. And I don't know. What I've seen has been pretty negative towards Amber Heard. And I'm not saying that's my opinion. I'm just saying what I've seen.
Yeah, there's been some a fair amount of negativity towards her. I will say, I don't know what happened in their house. Obviously, I don't know the details of it, the intimate details of it. But I am glad that this didn't turn into like a Phil Hartman situation where you didn't know anything about it, and then all of a sudden you're like, what? Like, someone died? Like, she shot him? Like, that was truly shocking. And I think this could have ended that way if it didn't end the way it did. Like, it sounds stupid to say, but I think that this had the potential to be as explosive.
I absolutely agree with you, Lance. This could have definitely been one of those cases. Mm-hmm. So, luckily, it's just, you know, not just, but luckily, it's a defamation trial and not a murder trial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, I'm going to geek out and follow this, guys, just so you know. And I'm going to send you updates if you want them, because
are we going to cover it on Women in Crime? I'm not.
So many people ask me that. Yeah, I know you did. I'm pretty sure I'm going to cover it. I want to see how the trial plays out though before we do, because I want to be able to do have the deepest dive on it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now on Women in Crime, are you going to cover Amelia Earhart?
Yeah,
if you'd like us to. Whatever you'd like.
What if we can prove that before she disappeared, that she robbed a bank and took all that money with her onto the plane?
Yeah, we'll put her on Amy's list, though, because I'm already covering Amber Heard, and that's going to be a lot of work.
Yeah, I'll take her.
Okay.
Okay.
Problem solved.
Tim and I believe that she's in cahoots with D.B. Cooper.
We're pretty sure. We've got some explosive info that we're about to drop.
She is DB Cooper. Oh, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, don't. Whoa.